This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. It's 7:35. Only days into the 2013 legislative session last January, it became obvious to those in the halls of the state capitol it would be the year of education reform. With the passage of the governor's bill, immediate steps were taken to improve student achievement, but some steps could not be implemented so quickly. As Ashton Morrow reports, legislators are still learning how they can help improve early childhood education in West Virginia.
The most critical years in learning come from birth to the third grade. That's what members of the National Governors Association's Division of Education told state lawmakers this week. They presented trends and data showing just how crucial those years can be and suggested they become the priority for West Virginia's education system moving forward. Albert Watt is a senior policy analyst for the division.
All this to say that the first 8 years, based on these data and trends, and based on what we know about brain development, is extremely important in terms of setting a foundation either weak or strong for later success.
Watt presented trends and data on early education from across the country to the Joint Committee on Education, starting with graduation rates. Nationwide, Watt says 22% of low-income students fail to graduate by the age of 19.
The kind of good news is that if kids of any income levels are proficient in reading by third grade. So for low-income kids, if they're proficient by reading by third grade, their rate of not graduating by age 19, so the failure rate, if you want to call it that, basically reduced by half.
Literally cut in half. Watt's data shows the rate drops to 11% for low-income kids and from 6% to just 2% for children from higher-income families. The data supports the importance of meeting that benchmark. Unfortunately, Watt says it's not being met across the country, at least not yet.
The bad news is that even though that's such an important benchmark, in our nation, two-thirds of our fourth graders are not performing at a proficient level in terms of reading.
That very benchmark for a child to be proficient in reading by the third grade was set forth as a goal for the state by Governor Tomlin earlier this year when he signed the education reform bill. Even though there was a strong focus on reading, Watt says STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math education are still priorities.
There's a little bit of a lag in terms of policy here, but there's a lot of research about how much kids can learn in the early years before third grade, in terms of even before kindergarten, in terms of math, that we're not really taking advantage of. The way that we're training teachers and the curriculum that we're using is really dumbing down the sort of the content that kids can learn.
And it extends beyond the reading, writing, and math that are traditionally taught in school. Watt says today, effective teachers are learning to teach kids at these young ages more cognitive, critical thinking, and even emotional lessons to educate the whole child. So how do we provide children a strong education base at a younger age? Watt says it starts with the teachers.
The notion is that, you know, these grades are easy to teach. If you know how to add 1 + 1, then you should be able to teach math in first grade, which is really not true. So I think we need to really pay more attention to the quality of instruction in these grades.
The way to do that, according to Watt, is with a proper teacher evaluation system, one that is adapted to focus on the needs of early education and continuous professional development that allows teachers to learn nationwide best practices for younger students and put them to use. But it's not just the teachers. Sarah Silverman, program director of the NGA's education division, says principals play a crucial role as well. She suggests those overseeing pre-K through third grades should have clinical experience with early grade levels and should be evaluated on how well they are able to assist their teachers in continuing focus on those critical ages. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
With a new football season came new state regulations meant to protect student athletes in West Virginia. The new standards come on the heels of the National Football League's latest reforms to try to protect its players from traumatic brain injuries. As Beneduccio reports, stakeholders who are concerned about this issue hope new protocols will prevent serious injury.
The state legislature passed a measure that provides protocols for head injury protections for student high school athletes and younger in West Virginia. These guidelines require coaches to have course training on head injuries and concussions, as well as being mandated to remove players from competition who are suspected of these types of injuries. State Senator Ron Stallings says there's a specific mission with these new rules.
I think this bill's a good bill, and we'll see it being implemented as we speak. You know, for me to be a volunteer physician on Friday nights, I have to take that educational piece myself. And so it's a good thing. It's a good bill.
Also under the guidelines, a concussion and head injury sheet must be signed and returned by the athlete and the athlete's parents before practice or competition begins. The injury sheet is to make officials aware of previous injuries. If a player has been removed from a game due to a head injury, that person may not return to action until the athlete is released from a licensed healthcare professional. Gary Ray with the West Virginia Secondary Schools Activities Commission says these new guidelines give teeth to his organization and other interested parties in protecting students. But he says parents must also play a role.
No, I was guilty when I played sports. You didn't want to tell mom and dad because you might not get a play next day. You've got to let people know. You got to communicate. And I think that is paramount when it comes to parents and our students and communicate with our schools. Maybe they don't always have the opportunity to identify when they're working with maybe 60 students in football or 30 or 40 students in soccer. They may miss something, but mom and dad working with their child, they need to make sure they're in constant communication with the school they feel is an issue.
Senator Stallings says he wants to make sure that all medical professionals like him who tend to athletes during games are protected from excess liability issues.
I think just basically saying that volunteer physicians, while at a volunteer event, Friday night football, that you would have coverage by the Board of Risk and Insurance Management. But I'd like it to be spelled out in statute that we're covered. We, meaning a volunteer physician at a football game or practice or things like that.
One final requirement of the new guidelines is that when students do suffer a concussion or a head injury in a practice or game, a report must be sent from the school to the WVSSAC within 30 days of the injury. The report must state whether an evaluation done by a medical professional verifies that a concussion has occurred. This report must also state how many days it's been between the injury and the athlete's return to competition. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:43. Mostly cloudy skies today with a chance of rain. Some snow has already fallen in the higher elevations. Temperatures in the 40s today, partly cloudy with a chance of snow tonight with fog forming overnight and lows in the 20s. Partly cloudy on Friday with a chance of snow in the morning in the higher elevations. It'll be a foggy start to the day. Temperatures in the 40s, partly cloudy with temperatures in the 50s on Saturday.
Support provided by West Virginia Division of Rehabilitation Services, enabling and empowering workers with disabilities to meet business workforce needs. Visit WVDRS.org for employer services.
Lumberjack in Bluegrass and Jamboree took full swing earlier this month at Twin Falls State Park. The annual event includes speed competitions, vendors, and bluegrass music, of course. Brian Allen has more from the event.
Come on, get that, go!
Preschool clubs from Penn State, Virginia Tech, and West Virginia University competed in various team events, such as log roll, cross-cutting, chainsaw, bolt-splitting, and chopping. The students' participation exposes them to the timber industry. Twin Falls Activity Coordinator Brian Danford oversaw the student competition.
All these students are learning how to basically what people did in the olden days, because they used cross-cut saws and hand axes in order to fell trees. Nowadays, it's more mechanized, and they have chainsaws and everything else in order to get the wood out. But we want to teach them the culture, and so and get them some good competition.
The co-ed teams competed for most of the day. There were male, female, and co-ed events, including the Jack and Jill competition, where a male and female cross-cut saw team would go against a team from another school. The Jamboree celebrated its 31st year. It's a community event that focuses on the importance of the timber industry in West Virginia. According to the West Virginia Forestry Association, the industry contributes just over $3 billion to the state's economy. Traditionally, timber ranks as one of West Virginia's largest major industries following coal. When the Western Virginia, now West Virginia, virgin forests were discovered, they were filled with large trees, some reaching heights of 140 feet and 27 feet in diameter, which included oak, maple, poplar, and the American chestnut. The chestnuts were killed off in the early 20th century by a fungus. Efforts are currently underway by the American Chestnut Foundation to restore the tree. Other trees under attack include the state's hardwoods by the gypsy moth and hemlock trees by the hemlock woolly adelgid. The West Virginia Department of Agriculture is working to combat the adelgid through chemicals and natural predators. But Amanda Cadle, who was watching the competition, shared a unique way of replanting hemlock trees, which she learned from a family friend.
And so my friend, wanting to preserve the memory of his father, took his idea and cut some branches off of that tree right after they cut it. Probably about the size of a seedling, you know, about this big around. You just take a hatchet and you just kind of split the end and you just plant it in fertile soil.
Cadle added that soaking the branches in water before planting them is helpful. She says her technique is working. However, her trees are in an isolated area away from the adelgids at a lower elevation and therefore in a somewhat protected environment. Whether or not her technique will work in other locations remains to be seen. In addition to the Lumberjack and Jill competition, the Lumberjack and Bluegrass and Jamboree held a variety of other attractions, including vendors' arts and crafts, bluegrass music, square dancing, and hay rides. The three-day Jamboree usually hosts around 3,500 visitors. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Brian Allen at Twin Falls State Park.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Find stories, photos, and videos, and you can subscribe to our West Virginia Morning podcast. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director this morning is Bill Lynch. I'm Beth Voorhees.